Welcome to A Juno Afternoon on Monday, January 8th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's good to have you with us as always. On today's show, Kara Nelson and Casey DeNadel will preview the Reentry Coalition's candlelight ceremony on Wednesday. We'll get a preview of Tuesday's Mudroom Storytelling event with Steve Su Wing. Chief Ed Mercer will give us a JPD update, and we'll learn about the Juno Violence Prevention Coalition with guest Britta Tonenson, Community Services Manager at AWARE. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 29 degrees with blue skies here in the capital city.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes in for Antonio Gonzalez. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers made public a permit application submitted to build the Pebble Mine in southwest Alaska. The application paints a clearer picture of the controversial copper and gold mine a Canadian company wants to build upstream from the fishing hub of Bristol Bay. Dacia Eaton reports.
The permit application is hundreds of pages long and includes maps of the open pit mine the company wants to build in the Bristol Bay region, about 200 miles southwest of Anchorage. It shows a 1.1 billion ton capacity tailing storage facility and calls for an ice-breaking ferry to haul minerals across a large lake, along with roads to access the mine and leading to a port to ship minerals out for processing. In addition, it shows a natural gas pipeline would have to be developed to power operations. The Pebble Limited Partner, a subsidiary of Northern Dynasty Minerals, has reduced the mine's footprint to 11 square miles in their application. It shows the company plans to mine 1.2 billion tons of materials over 20 years. Under the Obama administration, the EPA proposed putting restrictions on the project, but after President Donald Trump took office, the agency started a process to reverse their proposal. The EPA reached a settlement with Pebble, and the company began forging ahead, bringing on a new investor in December. The project is on state land, surrounded by Alaska Native villages. Virtually all of the region's indigenous people participate in subsistence fishing, hunting, and gathering for food, and many drink water from the rivers. Communities close to the proposed mine lack jobs and lean toward development, while those representing villages closer to Bristol Bay, where there's a thriving commercial fishing industry, are mostly against it. And they're quick to point out that the application shows over 3,000 acres of wetlands and waters must be filled in to build the mine site. In a written statement, Pebble Partnership CEO said that he believes as Alaskans become more familiar with the proposed project, there will be an increasing degree of support for it. The United Tribes of Bristol Bay Organization was quick to condemn the permit. United Tribes are fighting the project, saying, among other things, it will harm the salmon fishery based downstream. The Army Corps plans to hold a series of public meetings, and officials say the permitting process could take years. In Anchorage, I'm Dacia Eaton.
President Donald Trump's nomination for the Indian Health Service remains under a cloud after questions about his stated experience. A Wall Street Journal report Friday questioned Robert Weaver's claims that he worked in a supervisory role at St. John's Regional Medical Center in Joplin, Missouri, from 1997 to 2006. He made the claims during a Senate Indian Affairs Committee hearing. The paper contacted officials with the hospital at the time who could not recall his name or his position with the institution. One former executive said he remembered someone by that name working in a subordinate position in the emergency room. Weaver is a member of the Quapaw tribe of Oklahoma. He told the Journal, "There is a lot more to the story than what you are being told." U.S. Senator Tom Udall, the vice chair of the Senate committee, told CNBC that the contradictions between Weaver's comments and the revelations in the Wall Street Journal raise a number of serious concerns. The California State Department of Justice concludes a San Diego State University American Indian Studies lecturer harassed and discriminated against a student because she is white. The Chronicle of Higher Education reports the department investigated after complaints by a student against Oscar Monge. A confidential report said Monge's messages to the student constituted animus toward white people. Monge has been a longtime critic of the university's mascot, an Aztec warrior. Before taking his class, the student had also worked to have the university retire the mascot. Monge says he is appealing the Justice Department's ruling. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support for Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation comes from the Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More info can be found at montana.edu/Native American. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 8th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. Joining me here in Studio A now are Karen Nelson and Casey Donato. They are people in long-term recovery, community advocates. Kara is the co-chair of the Reentry Coalition, and we're going to be talking about the Reentry Coalition and an event on Wednesday at Northern Light United Church, a candlelight vigil. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. Is there anything you would add to your... You both wear sort of a lot of hats in the community. Anything you'd add to your introduction that I missed, Kara?
I think you covered it.
All right.
I am the director of Haven House Juno, which is part of the collaboration with the Juno Reentry Coalition. So that's a peer-based faith community for women coming home after incarceration.
Okay. And the Juno Reentry Coalition, if people don't know what that is, how would you explain it?
The Juno Reentry Coalition is a collaboration of many stakeholders in our community who come together and really try and fill in the gaps of this reentry process, which actually it's difficult to even say reentry because we start long before that, you know, with both pretrial, while you're incarcerated, and then really developing a kind of pre-release plan and then implementing that plan in the community. There's a lot of moving parts, and right now with criminal justice reform and smart justice happening, you know, it's really just a time to come together, try new ideas, be innovative, know what each other's doing, and really focus on our community, public safety, and making sure that we're filling in the incredibly huge gaps that we've had in the past, but we're bringing it together now together.
Okay. If you had to describe to someone who's never gone through reentry, being incarcerated and getting out and reentering society, mm-hmm. in sort of broad strokes, how easy or hard is that process?
Well, I will say we've made great strides, but a few years ago, I would say impossible. And it really is a testament to so many people. We stand on the shoulders of giants when it comes to criminal justice reform. Our state is a leader across the nation to really have smart justice, because previously and now, but we're working on it, you couldn't get a job, you have a felony conviction, you got to check the box. You know, we're dealing with family reunification, lack of community connection. We're dealing with addiction, mental health, OCS, you know, child services, and just a vast array of barriers that prevent someone, even if they wanted to, even when they have the desire to get, education and long-term sustainable employment. You continuously have to check this box, and the stigmatization is so, once you have that felon label, I mean, it trumps everything else. Now, we are making great strides on that. It's not just about, you know, the felony convictions. It's also about misdemeanors and really having some prevention there, and really elevating the services in the community versus putting it on DOC to be the largest mental health provider in the state.
That's Department of Corrections,
yes.
Right?
I'd also say that a lot of it is the unity that you find in the community. If you have that support in the services,
correct.
Then you have a lot better chance.
And that's what the Reentry Coalition is all about, right?
Absolutely.
And Haven House.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have, for instance, I'm the community co-chair, but I co-chair the Reentry Coalition with an appointed person from the Department of Corrections, which is huge. So it bridges these gaps and these preconceived notions and really works together on levels that we have never done in the past.
Okay. Speaking of community, tell us about the event on Wednesday night.
Sure. So I'm going to try not to be emotional. I just got off the phone with John Green, which has really inspired this time and the date. His beautiful 24-year-old daughter, Kelsey Green, died on January 10th from a heroin withdrawal in the Anchorage jail. And so, you know, he really wanted to bring this time together, not just about Kelsey, but we all have lost loved ones. You know, we really want to ask every city and town and village to participate and come together, and we want to invite all the members of all of our communities, all Alaskans who have been affected by this epidemic. We especially want to make sure that people from the recovery community are coming to share their experience, strength, and hope. You know, it's really a time also to bring awareness and recognizing that we need to make a change. We are making changes, but we have so much further to go, and we have to do it together. You know, and just to be in unison to say that addiction is not a choice. It's a symptom. And there is a daily reprieve in recovery, and there's so many out there, including John, who's just a dear friend of mine, and his beautiful wife, Kathy. You know, we're out there fighting, advocating from this place of knowledge. There's not one person who has not been affected by addiction. Addiction doesn't discriminate, but neither does recovery. And so there's a lot of different layers going on here. It's not one thing. It's not black and white. There's not one pathway to get there. And so we are coming together in remembrance of those lost, and also awareness that, you know, if you wouldn't believe the names that have come in. You know, we will be doing a reading of names, you know, and there are just thousands of Alaskans. And, you know, that's not a choice. People are not making a choice to go out there and die. And so it's really a coming together of awareness of recovery and supports that we're lacking.
Thinking of awareness, we hear terms like the opioid epidemic, and we hear epidemic.
Yes.
What does it look like here in Juneau as mm-hmm. people that work in this community?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say out of 10 people, mm-hmm. how many people mm-hmm. are addicted? What's mm-hmm. it look like?
I don't know the exact percentage here in Juneau, and I'm probably a little... you know, because this is what I do, so I see the masses, you know, and so I don't really have a way to gauge the actual percentages. But I can tell you, first of all, as someone who's in long-term recovery, the words opioid epidemic really ping me the wrong way, because it's an addiction epidemic, and because there is so... it is a symptom of the disease, and there is a daily reprieve. And so we're not giving people the opportunity for that daily reprieve. So right now I'm working with, you know, I'm kind of a go-to for the entire community. I get different calls here and there, and as we do and yeah. others do. And, you know, really navigating that process for people is excruciatingly difficult. The process is asking for help, feeling comfortable asking for help, then getting an assessment, making sure that person can make the assessment. It could be weeks out. It could be tomorrow. We don't know. But then once that's done, where are they being placed, and how do we get them there? You know, we have a 28-bed facility, or excuse me, 28-day facility here in Juneau. Mm-hmm. Most people that I have the honor of working with need much longer than a 28-day facility. And so then how do we get them to the proper units? I don't see there being a lack of beds across the state, but I do see the process is one of the most grueling parts.
Broken.
Absolutely. And then you got to figure in that a lot of people that I see anyway are homeless. They don't have the means to do what's being asked of them. It's mm-hmm. devastating.
And this is the process of getting a person who's addicted into treatment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And for some people, it works just perfectly fine. You know, it really depends on many factors that have not come together yet. I do have faith in our state that we are working on that vigilantly. We got to do more again. So, and of course, my passion is really people who are incarcerated, which is a perfect opportunity, you know, to really take that moment and do what we can there and you know, if we could get assessments and physical and TB and all the things that we need, or even Vivitrol shots, which we are doing in some parts of the state, and then following that out, but that is not happening. And mm-hmm. so 9 times out of 10, 9 3/4 times out of 10, people are begging for treatment while they're incarcerated. Get out, and they're not set up for that. So they're back on the street, and then people are like, look at you, you know, you're just a throwaway. And that's not true. So anyway, I don't know if that answered your question. Sorry.
Anything you'd like to add to that, Casey?
Well, when they get out of prison, we've seen time and time again that if they have the support, if they have people meeting them at the gates and walking them through the next steps, they go far and beyond anybody's hopes and dreams. I mean, it's amazing what they achieve then. Right. And if nobody's there, then they fall through the cracks time and time again. And it's so sad to see because, like Kara said, they become what people consider a throwaway. And nobody deserves that kind of title. We all deserve second and third and fourth chances.
100 chances.
Everybody, somebody's son, daughter, wife, you know, husband.
Yeah. It took me a lot of chances, which is what drives my passion today.
You never know when that one time will be the time.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's among the things that the Reentry Coalition supports and advocates for, more community supports for individuals who are getting out. So this is going to be a candlelight vigil. It's from 6 to 8. Is that right? And it's statewide?
So there are several places that will be doing this simultaneously. Kelsey's Key, which is an organization founded by John and Kathy, Kelsey's parents, and that's in the Matsu Valley. There's Freedom House, which is one of our sister recovery houses. Shout out to Jennifer in the Soldotna area, which is another home for women. And then there's Real About Addiction, Kim Whitaker. She's another great advocate in our state, and that's in Anchorage. Juno, of course, is going to be at the Northern Light Church. There's also residents of Copper River, and Fairbanks is also going to be holding a vigil. I'm not quite sure the location. So it is happening across the state. You know, it's not that we haven't done this before here, but it's really powerful to come together as one and have this unity and voice. You know, we'll have an opening prayer and a couple speakers, possibly some parents, but also people from the recovery community, and then we'll do a benediction. That'll be from 6 to 6:30. And then at 6:30, we'll have the lighting of candles, and we will read of names. And then after that, we will open it up to anyone who would like to say a word or two. Very powerful.
Again, that's this Wednesday night, Northern Light United Church, Federal Flats down here, from 6 to 8. As we wrap up here, what's next? What's next for the Reentry Coalition? What do you hope for the future? I know that's probably a huge question.
That is a huge question. You know, our hope for the future is just to continue this passion and drive to bring the balance between helping Alaskans understanding, breaking the stigma, but also maintaining the public safety and bringing in all these people who have never been in the same room together. And, I mean, I see where reentry is not going to be as it used to be. Right? We're just Alaskans, just like we were Alaskans before we got our criminal backgrounds. We haven't changed. And so why can't we come to our community? It's not their community, right? This isn't us and them. It's just people helping people. You have a criminal background. Mostly a lot of that has to do with addiction and mental health. And so I really see us continuing to elevate the services in the community where it should be, right? While also maintaining this flow of working together in the different areas that we're all experts in, and also elevating those who have lived experience and their family members. That's very dear to me, obviously. My hope is that we're going to put DOC out of business. That's really the goal. And I'm sure many who work there would agree. I know they would, because they're very passionate about this, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's the voice of Kara Nelson. Also in the studio is Casey Denadel. You can meet them this Wednesday evening from 6 to 8 at Northern Light United Church. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
It's an honor.
Yeah. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add?
No.
Just that we can and do recover. And if you're ever looking for help, you know, there are a lot of resources. You can go to the Juneau Reentry Coalition website, which I believe is JuneauReentry.org, but you could probably Google it and make sure. And any of us, you know, in the community, just reach out. There's always hope. You can always move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Another friend said to a kiss, I'm gonna have to leave ya. I'm selling something to the man, I guess I did wrong. And although I did the best I could, I'm gonna have to leave ya. So now I'm kissing you farewell for much too long. And here's a song.
Do you have stories and life experiences related to the Juneau Indian Village, often called the Willoughby District? What about the Douglas Village? Or family and memories related to downtown Juneau history? If you do, the Arts Council wants to hear from you. The Juneau Histories Theater Project is seeking participants to share stories in a community performance this spring. The deadline to let the Arts Council know that you're interested is January 10th, coming up soon. Go to jahc.org and scroll to the bottom to find the call for stories. Or call the Arts Council at 586-2787.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on Monday, January 8th. It's about 24 minutes past the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Steve Suwing. He's on the storyboard of Mudrooms. And also Eric Boras. He's the ED of Trail Mix, who is the beneficiary of Mudrooms this Tuesday. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Good to be here.
Nice to have you. What number are we in the series this year so far, Steve?
This is we're at the midpoint, or just over the midpoint. This is our fifth event of our seventh season of Mudrooms.
And you'll do 10, right?
Or we do nine.
Nine, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. We take June, July, and August off.
But otherwise, every month.
Yes.
usually work out to like the first Tuesday, kind of sort of
second Tuesday. Yep, second Tuesday of the month. So we've in years past we went back and forth, but this year we stuck with Tuesdays because of scheduling. And, of course, people that have those dedicated Tuesday meetings have voiced their frustration. So maybe next year we'll go back to a Tuesday-Wednesday schedule.
All right. So Tuesday is in tomorrow at 7 p.m.
7 p.m., Northern Light United Church. I would say, you know, some folks get there early. You know, part of the community of mudrooms is getting to see your friends and neighbors that you might see once a month at mudrooms. So folks usually start trickling in about 6:15, 6:20.
And it fills up.
It usually does fill up, yep. And I think we've got some extra folks coming to town here in the next couple of days with the legislative session, so I'm sure it'll be a busy night tomorrow night.
All right. Let's see. So music stories, about how long do these usually go?
Hour and a half. Okay. I'd say, you know, if you want to make plans afterwards, anything after 8:30 is probably safe. We start on time. We try to keep all the storytellers to 7 minutes, and a 15-minute intermission.
What happens if they go over? Do they get the hook?
We make strange animal noises. That's part of the setup there. But there have, you know, I would say that folks are pretty familiar with mudrooms now, being in the seventh season. So we haven't had to blow too many people off stage so far this year.
Eric, you've told a story there before, haven't you?
I did, a long time ago, 2012.
How have you described the experience?
It's a little stressful. Like it's fun. It's very rewarding.
It's like,
but
200
yeah.
some odd people
yeah,
looking up
staring
at you.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, I hope I. Yeah, don't forget my story. Yeah.
Do you remember the theme of your story or that night?
Cabin fever.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I told a story about it. I was building a cabin in Haines. I was restoring a cabin in Haines for the Forest Service back when I was, I think, 21 or so. And I told a story about the guy I worked with who was 70 years old and could work me under the table any day. It was impressive. So, yeah.
All right. Steve, $7 to get in is suggested donation. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Explain to us where that money goes.
Yeah, so I invited Eric to come here today. Usually we try to do it when we kind of do a new beneficiary. But the last three events and tomorrow night's event, the money goes directly to Trail Mix. And, you know, I think we are so proud of our trails here in Juneau. If you talk to anyone that says, what's the five greatest things about Juneau? We've got more miles of trails than roads is probably something that will come up. And so many great stories happen at cabins that are at the end of trails, on the way to cabins, any other kind of shenanigans that happen. And Trail Mix is an organization that supports these awesome trails, and we thought what a better way to support the possibility of great story making here in Juneau than to give the money to Trail Mix.
Excellent. Eric, can you, as the executive director of Trail Mix, can you give our listeners one example of a project, a local project you guys have been working on?
Oh, we've been working on the Treadwell Ditch pretty hard over the last couple years, and this last year was great. We got three of the major bridges in that we've been trying to get in for a while, one over Paris Creek. We replaced the bridge over Cowie Creek, which was failing, and one over Eagle Creek. So we're going to put in more next year. So that's been our primary focus, and it's good to see some results happening. So, yeah, we're excited about that.
So tell stories to support community and trails.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's a win-win, right?
Yeah.
Full circle. Before we went on the air, I was telling Eric, you know, when I'm out hiking in Juneau now and there's some problem with the trail, like I instantly think, wow, we got to get Trail Mix out here and take care of this problem. So I think it definitely is a nod to the great work that they do on trails and how much we do depend on organizations like them to upkeep the infrastructure we have. So I'm super excited that we were able to pass along these funds from the Mudrooms events to Trail Mix this year.
Yeah, okay. And it's great because it's something we need. We can get grant money to pay for projects, but to like keep the lights on, to keep every, like we need the community support in Juneau is amazing. We couldn't do it without all the people that are willing to help us out, give money that appreciate trails.
All right. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Steve, who are your storytellers and what's the theme?
Yeah, tomorrow our theme is Fork in the Road for this month. We thought it was a good theme for the start of the year. Greg Capito, Katrina Lee, Audrey Kohler, Jessica Bogard, Amy Bro, and Laura Haywood and Natalie Cosgrove will be taking the stage tomorrow night to tell a 7-minute story that has to do with Fork in the Road.
Fork in the Trail?
Fork in the Trail.
I, it might be too late to change. If you've been to a Mudrooms event before, you know that some of these themes are loosely interpreted by the storytellers. So I'm sure that there will be a fork in the trail story.
You have refreshments there as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, coffee is donated by COPA and cookies by the Rookery. And, they're very generous. And all those proceeds also go to Tromix. So.
That's the voice of Eric Boras, who will be there tomorrow night, I'm sure. Eric, in the past when you've gone, what's impressed you about these events, not only as a storyteller but as a listener?
How many people show up and really enjoy it. Like, it's a... what's a once-a-month thing, but like, it's packed every time. There's lots of people. A lot of people returning, a lot of people finding out about it and coming for their first time. And just the amount of community support for it, like how interested everyone is to hear everyone else's stories and how interesting the stories are, because there's a lot of people in this town who have done a lot of amazing things. And I think Juneau is the kind of place that attracts very interesting people, and it's good to hear them to say, tell us all how they became who they are.
Steve, how many years have you done this now?
I'm into my fourth season as a storyboard member.
And what keeps you passionate?
I think, in today's age, thinking about making assumptions about people is very easy to do because of where someone works or what someone has said. It's very easy to label and dismiss them or label them and move on. But just really the breadth of knowledge and experience that people have in our town that I've never known about, and then the strangers that are, definitely mirror some of my community as well, but have done amazing things, and just being exposed to those experiences through their stories is pretty amazing.
All right, so it's at Northern Light United Church tomorrow, Tuesday, 7 p.m., but probably get there at 6:15, 6:30.
I would say 6:40.
6:40, all right.
Yeah, Juno likes to work to a deadline.
All right,
So just think of the deadline as 6:40, and you'll be sure to be in your seat by 7.
And how would you describe to someone who's never been to Northern Light United Church how to get there?
I think the lights are still on at that house down there. But if you act like you're going to go up Calhoun by the Governor's Mansion and go up 12th Street and take a right on B Street, it's going to be right there on your left-hand side.
Okay, 7 p.m. tomorrow, Tuesday night. Anything I'm missing or anything you'd like to add?
Well, it's a new year, and I think that we thank them at the event, but seven years in, I'd like to thank the storyboard that makes this all possible. Alita Buss, Tom Cosgrove, Pat Roach, Rich Moniak, Sarah Hannon, and Melissa Griffiths. This is something that is definitely a labor of love, I think, for all of us, and everyone does a little something special and extra to make sure that these events happen on a monthly basis. So I just wanted to give those folks some acknowledgement and a thank you for the work that they do to make sure that this storytelling event happens 9 months out of the year here in Juneau, and we're able to collect some funds and pass it on to a great nonprofit like Trail Mix that benefits everyone in the community.
All right. Thanks, you too.
Thank you.
All of these lines across my tell you the story of who I am. So many stories of where I've been, and now I got to where I am. But these stories don't mean anything when you've got no one to tell them to. It's true, I was made for you. I climbed across the mountain tops, swam all across the ocean blue. I crossed over land and I broke all rules, and baby, I broke them all for you. Yeah.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 8th, 2018. It's about 23 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me in the studio now is Britta Tonneson. She is the Juno, she is the Community Services Manager at AWARE, and we're going to be talking about the Juno Violence Prevention Coalition and Safe Bars, and a meeting this Saturday over in Douglas. Welcome to the show, Britta.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here.
Yeah.
So describe a little bit, I just mentioned a few different capacities of yours here in the community, exactly what you do.
My role at AWARE is the Community Services Manager, and so I do outreach within Juno. I'm responsible for our rural outreach and then some other odds and ends for AWARE itself. I also, in my role, sit on the Juno Violence Prevention Coalition, which is somewhat housed at AWARE, but it's much bigger than AWARE and includes individuals in the community who are concerned and interested in violence prevention, as well as agencies. And so one of those programs, there are multiple pathways within that coalition. One of the programs in the pathway to engage men and boys is a new one called Safe Bars. And Safe Bars is an organization that's based out of Washington, D.C., but we're bringing it to Juno. We're in the initial planning and development, and then we hope to implement it in March, April, May of this year.
Okay, tell us more about Safe Bars. What does it look like?
Well, Safe Bars came about, I actually had a rural partner in Skagway call and ask for help because there were just so many sexual assaults coming out of the bars. And so I was asked for materials and support, and I started looking up and I found Safe Bars. And I'm also a member of the Sexual Assault Response Team here in Juno. And so it just made sense for if our community, our rural communities are doing it, it's a problem here, let's bring it. And I brought the idea to AWARE's Prevention and Outreach Director, Atina Sia. She incorporated it into a grant, and we were given funding. So we will bring two trainers, the executive director, I believe, and co-director of Safe Bars Washington, D.C., to come host a two-day 12-hour training, so 2 days of 6 hours each, to train a team of trainers. And these trainers will go out and train interested bars or agencies that benefit from nightlife in how to intervene in bystander in incidences of discrimination or harassment. And the specific goal is to intervene in sexual harassment, but the bystander intervention goes across all forms of discrimination, so we hope to have that represented in Safe Bars Juno.
Okay.
But part of bystander intervention is identifying when discrimination and harassment is happening and then effectively and safely intervening in those instances.
Can you give us an example of what might be the most common kind of harassment that one might see in a bar?
I think racism is probably big, and whenever there's often racism and sexism go together, there's harassment, you know, typically against women, I think is the most common form of harassment in a bar, and singling out women, be it just with alcoholic beverages or as we've heard in the past couple weeks, drugging and roofing has been more highlighted in our local news. But that harassment can look like anything from just annoying women. I don't know if you heard a couple years ago Meghan Trainor's song No, and she's like, please stop asking me my name, stop asking me for my number. Like, I've clearly made it apparent that I'm not interested in you, so stop asking me. To actual sexual assault, things where it ends in pretty severe violence.
Okay. So this Saturday you're going to be meeting at Louie's. What's this meeting going to look like?
Yeah, so Abby graciously offered us her space. Aware will, well, the Juno Violence Prevention Coalition will provide some food and beverages will be available. And we just hope to share more about what the program is, what we would like this program to look like in Juno specifically. DC is very different than Juno, so get an idea of what the situation is in Juno. And then define roles. There are multiple ways that people can get involved, and I've tried to put my feelers out to anybody who has vested interest in nightlife. It can be a performer. It can be a bar owner. We've talked to best practices in tourism management, Travel Juno. I'd love to have the Chamber of Commerce come, anybody who would like to be part of this program, to give us some information, because bystander intervention, and this program is really a community response, so we're trying to get the community involved. And so we're going to talk about the program, how it will look here, next steps, who could be potential trainers, and so further outreach to square those people away for March. And then those trainers will go out and train bars. And so perhaps there could be an advisory board. You know, it's just really the developmental stages, and we could use as much help. I just read a quote that without diversity, we have more blind spots. And so please feel welcome to come so that we're making sure that this program represents all of Juno.
And this is from 2 to 3:30?
2 to 3:30 at Louise Douglasson.
Okay. If people want more information on Juno Safe Bars, how should they go about getting it, or if they want to talk to you?
Sure. They can call me at AWARE's Prevention Office. My phone number is 586-4902, or you can email me, Britta, B-R-I-T-T-A-T, at awareak.org.
Okay. Britta, thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you would like to add about this program or learning more about it? Or
if you can't make the Saturday meeting, please call and get engaged in the project. Anyways, we'll be doing this for years to come, hopefully.
All right, Britta, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, January 8th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. In the studio now is Sarah Schaefer. She is KTOO's Development Director. Welcome to the show, Sarah. Nice
Thank
to have you.
You.
All
Thank
right.
You, Scott.
So we're going to do a little preview for Seafood Fest. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes, we are. Oh, my favorite event of the year.
Why is it your favorite? If somebody's never been, how would you explain what is Seafood Fest?
Oh, it's just food. There's so much good food prepared by our local restaurants, and you know, it's we're really fortunate that we have great community partners for this event. This is, by the way, one of KTOO's biggest annual fundraisers. So when you come and you purchase your tickets, then this is all in support of public media. So that's to be said first. And then we have great community partners. We have Taco Fisheries and Hooked Seafood, and they are donating fish to us, and you can hear my little son Christopher. He's just excited.
He loves seafood.
He loves seafood too. Yeah, I mean, who doesn't? So they donate fish to us, and this year we also added spot prawns to the mix. Thank you to Hooked Seafood, and we give that to the restaurants, and they can prepare with it what they want. So we have halibut, rockfish, salmon, and spot prawns, and they prepare it, and people come and enter, and then they can go around to the different stations and just eat.
It's kind of like an all-you-can-eat seafood buffet of deliciousness.
But better, because it's Alaskan sustainable seafood, and that's why we also have Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute sponsor this, and Pacific Seafood Processors Association. So it's really an industry event a little bit. We've got Breeze Inn, Saffron, Swanatai Cafe, V Celador, The Hangar, TK McGuire's, and Raven Cafe at the APK. So also a wide variety. You know, Raven Cafe, they do something like more Filipino style. Then we have Swana, which is Thai. So, you know, a wide variety of seafood that, you know, you have to go to all these restaurants to get a taste of what they do. But there you have it all in one. And we have desserts.
So a variety of delicious seafood supporting public media. It's on what, February 3rd?
February 3rd. You can go online and get your tickets now. And desserts. Did I mention desserts?
No, you didn't.
Glacial Grinds and Coper and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company are, see, I also have a sweet tooth. So after you've had your seafood, you can have desserts. And it's all included in the ticket price.
5 o'clock. That Saturday?
It's 5 o'clock. It's for the, and this is another caveat of the event, there is a Tudor beer tasting with Alaskan Brewing Company. That is an additional little ticket that you can get on top. Right? Yes, beer, Christopher. I know. So Alaskan Brewing Company also has been so kind to do this every year with us. So beer tasting first, and then Seafood Fest.
So fun, so fun. Where do people get tickets?
You can go online at kto.org, and then just click through. There's a little tile on the sidebar, and just click through and get your tickets ASAP.
All right, that's Saturday, February 3rd at Centennial Hall, right?
Yes, correct.
5 p.m.-ish starts. Tickets where?
At kto.org.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, all in support of public media, come and join us and celebrate with us good food and good desserts.
Thank you. Thank you. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon.
This is Bird Note. Imagine you're camping in the mountains, surrounded by pines, larch, and spruce. The very first bird you might see is a gray jay as it boldly swoops down into your camp. This handsome jay has a smoky gray back and wings, silvery gray underparts, a tiny black beak, and big black eyes that seem to miss nothing, especially food. But the one food gray jays don't eat is conifer seeds. So why do they live in conifer forests? It turns out the jays hide food in conifer needles and tuck it under the bark of trees with their sticky saliva. Like other jays that cache food, gray jays have terrific visual memories. They can find thousands of hidden tidbits months later. Gray jays are so good at storing up food, they even start nesting before the winter ends. The jays can feed their nestlings entirely from the food they've stored away. And unlike most other birds that nest in spring and summer, gray jays spend that time caching food for the next winter. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
Thanks for tuning in to A Juno Afternoon. Ben Brown will be your host tomorrow, and C.N. Murphy will be here with details about this year's Poetry Omnibus program. Andy Hirsch from the library will highlight the Discover Technology series. We'll talk with Mary Carpinetti about next week's free legal clinics, and we'll learn more about the Orpheus Project with Todd Hunt and Katie Giorgio. Thanks for tuning in to A Juno Afternoon today. Let's take a quick look at the weather. It's currently 29 degrees here in the capital city, and tonight we should see increasing clouds with a low around 17, northeast winds 25 to 30 miles per hour with gusts as high as 45, and tomorrow, Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 20, northeast wind 30 to 35 miles per hour. Wednesday calls for mostly sunny skies with a high near 22, winds 20 to 25 miles per hour, again from the northeast, and still partly sunny going into Thursday with a high near 24. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon.